Good afternoon and welcome to Family First with five-time author and top speaker Randy Rolfe. Your family may be facing a variety of issues that you'd like addressed. No two families in the world face identical problems, but Randy has seen almost all of the difficulties families today face, and she and her expert guests have the answers that you seek. Now, here is your host, Randy Rolfe.
Hello, and welcome to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and before we start today's interview, I want to make a couple of announcements. I'm very excited that this morning I just got the first copies of my new book, Mothers Losing Mothers. And so many women in the baby boom generation are taking care of ailing moms, and they eventually pass on their transition. So this book's designed to give comfort and reassurance in your time of loss. I lost my mom 3 years ago, and I interviewed three women who lost their moms just within a year of mine, and I've gotten some wonderful feedback from it. So if you know someone who's facing that transition with their mom, please check out my book on Amazon. It's also available in Kindle. And now one more announcement. July 11th, I'm doing a presentation in Westchester, Pennsylvania at the Daily Local News Community Media Lab on how to make sure your kids turn out okay, parenting for these times. And that's in the evening from 5:30 to 7. And you can find out more information on creativeeconomyenterprises.com, which is a fabulous organization, do a lot of neat events. So on with today's show. Today we're going to talk about how to create togetherness and how that's a key to true lasting love relationships. In today's society, we're surrounded by the search for love in books, in songs, in movies, on comedy shows, on TV, and now all over the web. But how many of us know how to find it and even what we're looking for? As children, we're taught to get out there and find love without any cues or instruction on how to make it happen. It's no wonder that so many adults can make messes of their relationships and end up questioning if being loved or finding love is even possible or meant for them. My guest this week on Family First is Cindy Dale, a renowned author on intuitive and spiritual matters who's developed a guide that serves to open the heart, show you how to nurture your relationships, and give you new optimism and confidence about loving and being loved. She's going to share how our past experiences can keep us back in fear and get us stuck, and how to better understand our feelings and keep them from spoiling our relationships. So listen in for her great insights. I'm going to tell you more about her background. She's an internationally respected author and spiritual scholar with a number of very famous books. The Subtle Body earned the Gold Nautilus Award, and her book, The Complete Book of Chakra Healing, is currently in its 14th printing. She's also author of the intuitive guidebook, How to Safely and Wisely Use Your Sixth Sense. She's president of Life Systems Services, through which she's conducted over 35,000 client sessions and trainings in Europe, Asia, and the Americas. She's studied cross-cultural healing and energy systems and has led instructional classes in many countries, including Peru, Costa Rica, Venezuela, Japan, and the list goes on. I just picked a couple of them, as well as among the Lakota people and the Hawaiian kahunas. So she knows a lot about traditional spiritual systems. Her newest book, which we'll talk most about today, Togetherness, Creating and Deepening Sustainable Love, is co-authored with psychotherapist Andrew Wald and serves to explain and demystify relationships without taking the soul out of them. I love that. Cindy currently lives in Minneapolis, Minnesota, which is a fabulous city, with her two sons and various pets. So welcome to Family First, Cindy.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here, and I wanted to compliment you back on your book, Mothers Losing Mothers. It's very appropriate in my current life, so I'm actually going to go get that on Amazon.
Oh, fabulous. Well, thank you. Thank you. It's touching so many lives these days, and our society just doesn't even recognize it yet. So thank you. That's great. So how did you decide to focus on creating togetherness in your new book, Cindy?
Great question. Andy and I have been friends for maybe 15 years or so. He's a psychotherapist and I do intuitive consulting, and we have family in common. I know his wife and his sister-in-law. And a few years ago, we were comparing our client sessions. And, you know, we came up with the very same concerns that are highlighted over and over again, no matter why somebody comes in the door, inevitably they end up asking about and talking about love. And sometimes it's that kind of overdone but all-consuming quest for the soulmate, or how to turn your husband or wife into the soulmate that you want them to be. You know, so often the questions start with or end at romance. But, you know, people's concerns really are about love in general. Randy, they're all about, you know, how can I feel loved, be loved? Where do I go with my love? You know, how can I get more love? How can I create love in a situation that doesn't seem to be very full of love? And it's a quest that I think is in our soul. I mean, I really believe we're on this planet in order to create love. And so we sing together in chorus, but we don't always know how to do it. And Andy's done even more client sessions than I am. It's something like 50,000 or 60,000. And we sat down and said, if we were really to share the wisdom we've learned working with wonderful, awesome people that would help additional people about love, what would it be? And the word that popped in for us is togetherness, because people first and foremost really need to get a sense of love that they can work for. It's not so pie in the sky and almighty or impossible or starry-eyed or dreamy, that it can actually enter your home and show you what to do, how and when. And you can also go out into the world and search for more love with a sense of what it needs to feel like and look like and be like. And I think togetherness is the word that best encapsulates divine love in human form, to be really honest.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah, I think I agree with you. We're here to create love, and we are social beings. We don't feel good unless we're relating to other people and nature and animals. And I love that you chose togetherness to kind of get underneath that kind of starry-eyed thing you see in the TV shows and the movies, that there's some kind of perfection that you're going to find rather than create.
Well, exactly, because we can't offer it, so I'm not quite sure why we expect it. You know, I've been a single mom for a really long time, and I have an absolutely wonderful relationship with my ex-husband of 10 years. And I'll tell you, we have earned that relationship. We've gone through all the ups and downs that married couples go through, plus more, because, you know, when you finish sparring and you're left there with an awesome, beautiful child to raise, you have to get on top of yourself, and you have to say, how are we going to create togetherness out of the ashes? How are we going to model for this child, this gift that we've been given, a form of love that's going to help him love himself, love other people, and go out into the world and make the kind of choices that will enable him to love not just other human beings, but what he does at the same time? So togetherness is something that we can grasp, and we can examine and express, I think, no matter what kind of relationship we're in or we're working for or we're working toward as well.
That's very cool. And, you know, it's interesting to create a loving relationship with an ex, but a parent of your child is critical, like you say, to model that the child can find love too, even though that closeness didn't work to live together among the parents. They have the right to go out and create love for themselves, and that's so important. I'm glad you brought that up. I wanted to ask you, Cindy, how did your work with the subtle body and the chakra healing, did that give you a bit of a different perspective on creating love and togetherness than the typical client advice?
Absolutely. And Andy is an amazing therapist and brings in some of that psychotherapeutic analysis, you know, and can really talk about how our pasts affect us and what do we do with that inner child who keeps holding us hostage and making us mistrust or feel unworthy, as well as some really practical techniques to being in love in a way that you can stay in love. But being an energy person, which is what I am, I think adds a really special kind of torque to the subject because I see things a little different. So for instance, when we're examining what's happened in our past and how it's affecting us today, you know, are we out there dating the same alcoholic because their dad over and over, you know, again, or are we, you know, continuing to believe that we don't deserve love and so that's exactly the kind of love we get, like the kind of stuff that you really don't want to show up at the table for. That's kind of the typical approach, but I see all of that energetically. You know, for instance, I think that we can actually carry forward in time the energy of what we've been through. Perhaps Dad was mean to us, and so we have some of Dad's voice literally in our body constantly talking to us and saying, you don't deserve, you're no good, you're stupid, nobody nice is going to like you. And so we need to approach relationships in a energetic perspective, I think, in a spiritual perspective, not only from a psychological and a practical point of view. For instance, we all have energetic fields around us, and that's just not New Age or woo-woo talk. We actually are surrounded by electromagnetic fields, these waves of energy, different colors, different frequencies all the way around our body. And we can see pictures of these even by Googling on the internet. Science has special photographic film that takes energy pictures and shows us that we're bigger than our skin. Well, you know, those energy fields carry with us damage from our childhood. So if we are used to being treated a certain way, the messaging and imprinting of that actually stays in our field and attracts people who will continue to treat us the way we were treated as a child. So I think my addition to the book, that kind of twist on it, is to help us think a little bit outside of the box, Randy, and take a look at, you know, what's happening not just inside of our history, what's not, you know, what's happening in terms of our thinking and our psychology, but the energy of who we are. Are we open to cleansing some of the damage we bring forward? Are we open to shaping ourselves in such a way that we're sending a new message invisibly, maybe for some inaudibly, into the world so we get something back than what we're used to getting back?
That's very powerful, and I was just listening to a science show this afternoon about they've just discovered the Higgs field. I mean, there's so many, or the Higgs particle in the Higgs field. There's so much in science that it's we're constantly affected by fields, and talking about the effects of cell phones and the effects of microwaves, and
I know.
There's energy all over, and it's a pretty simple thought that we are a bundle of energy and that we carry the vibrations of our past, and that makes perfect sense.
Well, and one of the really interesting new science or quantum physics ideas is of what they call entanglement, which says that anything or anyone you've ever had an association with, you remain connected with. So even if they're on the other side of the world, or you're on a plane and they're on the ground, or you haven't seen this particular friend since you were age 6, you're connected. Because we're really just and simply moving fields of energy and light and sound. And so we remain connected because the body is just an oscillating set of fields. And it's, I think it's quite comforting to know that we are really connected or together with people even when we don't know it. We're really never alone. We do get to make choices, however, about who we actually want to be with. Like, who do we want to sit down and have coffee with? Who do we want to marry? How do we want to relate to the people from our past? I think it's important to know that within this dynamic of being unified, we get to say no. We get to say maybe. We get to say wait and see. We get to negotiate for what we want and what we don't want. And so to the word yes, we need to also add the word no as well.
That's important. So you talk in the book about the four cornerstones of togetherness and love. Can you tell us a bit about that before we'll come up on a break?
Absolutely. And think of what a cornerstone is. They're those bricks that are pointed at the base of a house. So they form the foundation and they connect what it is that's held between. And so there's four areas or arenas we need to pay attention to and create togetherness within and for. If we're going to be a really solid person and have solid, also exciting relationships. So we need to be together within ourselves, because I, myself, and me am an entire community right here. We need to really look to togetherness within our community, within our family and our friendships, and that which is the extended unity that we're within. We want to and need to have relationship and togetherness within our primary relationship, whether we're in a primary relationship or not. We need to act as if we are and create that form of bond and connection and love. And then there's really the all-important togetherness relationship with the divine, by whatever name we use to describe higher power. Allah, God, Christ. There is something greater. Even science now says there's this field of energy and it seems to be conscious. And so that ultimate togetherness, I think, is the one that we need to allow in. I use the word grace, in the form of grace or love that really moves and produces an effect, in order for us to have togetherness at all the other three levels as well.
Oh, I love that, and grace is one of my favorite words, because it to me it speaks of that influence of the divine in our everyday life.
And it does. And, you know, it even says in a number of sacred scriptures, you know, that ultimately the union of two souls in a marriage or a relationship, you know, is best and probably only possible when threaded with that divine stream of energy. And so I think we need that within ourselves, too. We constantly, I think, need to be open to whatever those spiritual qualities are that we need to more completely embody. And that's how we grow. That's how we mature. And ultimately, a relationship becomes, I think, Randy, a togetherness relationship when we let that in. We don't have to preach. I mean, it's not about even noticing that verbally, but it is about knowing in our heart that presence is always present, and we can lean into it, and we can run with it. We can fly with it as well.
That's great. Yeah, I want to go into those cornerstones a bit more after the break, but I wanted to ask you, I know in your book you say, you know, and I think you just alluded to it, that it's not quite as hard as we make, we generally popularly think, to create love or find love. Is that true?
Oh, gosh, no. And if people read this book, the feeling I want them to leave with is the knowledge, the feeling of hope, and the conviction that they know a lot more about love than they think they do. Just because we've got a few bruises or a couple dead relationships back there, well, you know what? That's about learning. That's growth. That's learning. We know a lot more about love than we think we do. We just need to spiff it up and count it and claim it and acknowledge it. And it really isn't that hard. Hey, you know what? If I can get along with my ex-husband, he has a key to my house. All right. He's my emergency contact. We are as different as night and day. If we get along.
Well, Cindy, we're up on a break now. We're up on a break now, Cindy, and we're speaking with Cindy Dale, and that makes so much sense. If you can get along with your ex-husband and feel a togetherness for that relationship, then a lot of other things are a lot easier that will be possible. So we'll come back in just a couple of minutes with Cindy Dale, who's an internationally recognized author and spiritual scholar, and she's just written a book on togetherness. So please stay tuned.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/voiceamerica or search for us at keyword Voice America.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters, whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance. Randy can help you.
The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe, has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to rolf@rolf.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. I'm your host, Randy Rolfe, and we're talking with Cindy Dale about how to create togetherness and seeing togetherness as a key to creating love in all kinds of relationships, not just your primary romantic relationship, but all of your relationships. And she's an internationally respected author and recently published the book Togetherness, Creating and Deepening Sustainable Love, co-authored with psychotherapist Andrew Walt. And she just shared with us the cornerstones of creating true love in your life of a lasting, sustainable nature. First of all, love of yourself, love of your family and close community, and a primary relationship. We want to talk more about all of these. And then the fourth is having that awareness of the totality, whether it's God or grace or the laws of nature, whatever those powers that are greater than yourself. And she's a spiritual and intuitive consultant and done 35,000 client sessions and trainings. And so I wanted to talk more about those cornerstones you mentioned earlier, that we can carry energy of past relationships that draw the same kind of people that have caused us pain in the past. So how do we help people let go of past experiences where they've felt burned or even burned out about love?
Well, that's a great question, Randy. And there's really a couple approaches to it. I think one step toward that is actually a philosophy or a new thought, which is to try to understand that the past doesn't really repeat itself. On a very real scientific level, nothing's the same in this moment as it was when I started my sentence. We're really not able to repeat the past. You know, everything changes. The cells in our body sometimes flip around on a millisecond basis. Others of them might take 10 years to die and a new one to be born. But we're constantly shifting and changing. Impermanence is really one of the truths and the truisms of this world and this universe. But that's kind of scary. We don't always like to think of it like that. So we think that if we hold on to a drama or a trauma and the lessons that we learned when going through it the first time, we think that those lessons will keep us from going through the same pain again. So let's say I'm 3 years old and Dad hits me. And I tell myself, if I run to my room every time I see Dad, Dad can never hit me again. So I'm 33, 53, 73, whatever the ages I come up to, I'm still at some level perhaps that little girl running away every time I see a man or I see somebody who could get angry. I'm collapsing. I'm going inside of myself. I'm hiding. So I'm not talking. I'm not representing myself. I'm not learning how to say no. I'm not, you know, negotiating for what I need. Maybe I'm not even ever with anybody because I've so trained myself into thinking that that pattern is going to keep me safe, I keep it going constantly. And so we need to break through those bubbles where we're stuck and we're captured in the past, A, by knowing things are not going to repeat, but B, we need to get in there and rescue that self that's trapped in time. From a therapeutic perspective, that's called doing inner child work, though it can take us well into our adulthood as well. You know, and going in, remembering the memories, feeling the feelings, getting a new point of view than the one we had as a kid and reparenting ourselves. But you know what, from an energy perspective which is kind of my gig, we need to see that self is literally trapped in time and space. And that we need to get her out of there or him out of there and bring that self up to date. Right now, here and now, listen to what he or she is saying, but give them some time and space to grow up in a different way with some healthier responses and some different truths. So we approach it energetically and therapeutically the same way, but when I work with clients, I literally tell them, we're going on a real rescue mission. Put on your space suit, you know, put on your scuba outfit, because we're going back in time, we're getting you out of there, we're closing up that gap, and we're letting you be here and now.
That makes so much sense. I can see where a defense that may have worked when you're a child is in your way. In the adult, I mean, you may not have been able to stand up to a vicious dad, but in your adult life, running to your room or hiding inside and never expressing what your needs are, the old defense doesn't work. But you're saying energetically, you're almost creating a wall that you need to step through.
Exactly. And, you know, I find in general a lot of women and men and what really impacts them in terms of relationship, you know, it emerges. It emerges in a healthy way from what we're grown up, you know, as and by and to become. And in general, women tend to be more caretakers, not just kind of through codependency, like giving themselves away, but even energetically. We tend to take on others' feelings or emotions as if they're our own, and then wonder why when there's a reaction, our partner seems to have none, and we have them all. Or when it's time to cry, we're the only one crying, and the other person isn't. So we can literally take on what's not ours as a self-defense mechanism, or a way to maybe reduce the tension in the house, and keep that pattern going long past its usefulness and kind of make ourselves sick or over-emotional with it as well. And, you know, sometimes it's more the boys, but it can be girls, too, who in a family drama say, well, I'm just not going to feel anything. I'll let everybody else have my feelings or the feelings because they're too scary and they're too big and I don't know how to cope with them. And maybe that got them through childhood, but 40 years later, it's just going to get them hit on the head by their wife. It's going to be saying, I need you to talk to me. So that drama stays within us until we rescue ourselves from it.
That's great. So the creating, is that, how does that relate to that first cornerstone of learning to love yourself? Is that about going back energetically to rescue that child?
Yeah, we have to rescue the parts of us that are stuck. And, you know, what I find with people who are really in a stuck pattern in terms of relationship, whether they be at work or home or play, they've tended to really judge their inner children piece. They decided there was something wrong with them because mom was acting this way or dad was acting this way or they weren't themselves treated right. So we need to love the parts of us that went through the challenges and even got stuck. You know, one thing I encourage people to do, and I do this with myself too, is to go the next level and not just love that part, but look for the gift that self has. For instance, I was super intuitive as a kid. I could see colors around people. I was kind of a weird kid. I saw colors. I could see shapes. I could talk to angels. I knew what people were feeling. And I kind of knew a lot of what people weren't saying. I knew when they were lying. I knew when Dad was going to drink. I knew when my mom was just plain, frankly, crackers. And I couldn't say that stuff. So I started to judge the part of myself that could perceive those realities as wrong, as overbearing, as too strange, as not religious or not good enough and all these things. And now I'm going, gosh, that was a wise little kid. I certainly don't have to blurt that out, but I can cultivate that child self. I can love her and cultivate her learnings, her wisdom, and weave them into my life. So the part of us that we most avoid probably has one of our gifts, a true gift contained within him or her that we're going to want to unlock and start to use in our everyday lives.
Oh, that's good. That's great, because obviously that gives some hope and confidence. And so often adults are carrying around a low self-image because of troubles in their childhood or even their early love relationships. And being able to energetically shift like that is very powerful. So can you give us some an example, perhaps, from your clientele?
I can. I'll give you one that involved a couple who came to see me. And he had left his marriage to get involved with the woman who came in with me, and he had a lot of anger. He had acted out a lot, been a sex addict, had one partner after another, had himself constantly abandoned his children. And you can imagine he didn't feel very good about this. Neither did his wife, who he was divorcing, or his current girlfriend. And I said, you know, why don't we figure out what you're acting out and what's going on? And he was really scared. He thought I would tell him he's this bad person and maybe his behavior wasn't healthy and it wasn't ethical. But we needed to figure out why this was happening. And so we did some regression work, and he went back to when he was just 3 or 4, which, as you can imagine, isn't an age we keep uppermost in our minds. And right. He remembered walking in on his father, who was cheating on his mother with somebody else in the house. Pretty dramatic, scary situation. So he was actually acting out what his dad did as a way of not judging his father. He didn't want to become his dad, but he didn't want to judge his dad, because who doesn't want to love your dad? So he didn't even know he kept acting out dad's stuff. You know, we had a really interesting experience in the office, though. When I said to this gentleman, well, you know, is there anything or anyone bigger than you or your dad in this situation who could help you? And this man wasn't a believer in God or religion or whatever. And he said, oh, there's a really big angel. And from his child's point of view, that's how he would see a bigger presence, a divine presence. And this being, kind of across time, picked up the little self, got him out of there, breathed into him and said, you can forgive your father and yourself. And from that point on, this was 15 years ago, that particular gentleman has never even had the urge to act out in the negative way, in the self-destructive way that he had before. So he was really able to let in something bigger to help him shift, but he first kind of had to remember why he adapted these behaviors or adopted them in the first place.
That's really neat. And it came down to accepting that he needed to forgive his father, to know that his father was making a mistake and that it was very scary to him, but that he can forgive him instead of trying to replicate his behavior just to justify his actions. It's fascinating.
Yeah. Or sometimes what people do is, instead of emulating, they go the opposite direction. And that doesn't always work either. I mean, it's not like we, you know, don't want to be faithful to our partner, but we don't want to lose ourselves either. So some people in a situation where maybe the parents weren't real present or were playing around or drinking or something go the opposite way and get so strict and bound up. They're kind of not very fun to be around.
Right, right. Well, that leads to my next question. Often when you speak of togetherness, people are afraid that they're somehow going to be trapped by this love partner, that they're going to be in lockstep, they won't be able to do what they want, or they may be in a codependent intimate relationship. So togetherness can have that connotation to some people. So how do you distinguish that? How do you have a person maintain their own integrity and healthy separateness while still being together?
You know, that's a big fear for a lot of people, and I have had my days of feeling like, oh my gosh, I don't want to get the spider web around me, you know, somebody who's telling me what to do or what I can be or what I can't be. So that's a real normal fear for a lot of people. Some people like that feeling, and some of us are a bit more independent and don't want it. So, you know, we do really need to go back to that word no, and know that in any form, we get to use it and we get to negotiate. There was a book I read years ago by Kurt Vonnegut, who's a fiction writer, when I was an English major, and in it he featured, I don't remember the name of the couple, but they were completely symbiotic. They did everything together. They both wore brown corduroys. They repeated each other's statements. It was spooky. And that's what we don't want, because we're here to be who we are. We're not here to be who somebody else is. And so there needs to be a gentle dance instead of an out-and-out war to establish our own uniqueness and to enjoy that within ourselves and to keep inviting our partner to enjoy the fact that we're different than them. I mean, do I really want to be married to myself? I don't think so. I'm hard enough to get along with sometimes inside of myself. So the hardest thing that happens in relationship is after a while, we kind of want the other person to be a little bit more like us. We think we do, but we really would just get bored at another yes man or no woman sort of thing. So those differences are what create vitality and uniqueness and the opportunity to fall in love over and over again. Because, you know, those first few months about infatuation, yes, some of it's about we really like how we're being because we're on good behavior, but some of it is really being able to see the world with different eyes through the eyes of that new romantic partner or that brand new friend or that person who we're getting to know or our child after they're born. So if that person was supposed to become just like us, we fail to get to know the world in an innovative way that we can if we support their uniqueness and really ask them to support our own as well. You know, I'm doing a lot of dating right now, and one of the red flags that scares me is if a guy says, you know, I basically want a buddy. Like, I want to go elk hunting. This is the guy, not me. You know, I want to do this. I want to go do that. And I'm like, well, that's great. Go have fun. But if he starts to go, well, you can be out there wearing the camo, too. I'm going, I don't think so. How about if I'm at the cabin reading a book? So unless there's space for that, it's really not that interesting for me, to be really honest.
Exactly, and we're coming up on another break, but I really like the dance analogy that you're doing different steps, and my husband and I are very much in love. We've been together over 40 years, and it's like that. We bring richness back to our relationship from all the different things we do. He's a painter, I'm a writer. You know, we do all different things, and we have a lot to share. Before the break, I just want to read one quote that I absolutely love from your book at the beginning of chapter one, The Search for a Soulmate. Life has taught us that love does not consist in gazing at each other, but in looking outward together. And that's Antoine de Saint-Exupéry. That's one of my favorite quotes about love in all of literature. So it was just exciting to see that in your book. But that idea that you're sharing a certain outlook, but you don't have to share every minute or every experience unless you're just bringing it home and chatting over dinner. But it's about having a shared vision of what you want your lives to look like. We're talking with Cindy Dale and about togetherness, creating and deepening sustainable love, which is the name of her new book. And, we'll be back in a few minutes after this break. So hang on, Cindy. I want to talk a little more.
Learn more. Live better. Voice America Health and Wellness.
What if thinking just a little bit differently about your daughter could make her more respectful, a better student, or less vulnerable to peer pressure? What if a few simple changes in your words with your son could make him more responsible, a better listener, or more fun? Five-time author and dynamic speaker Randy Rolfe has answers to your questions about family matters, whether it's your kids, parents, schools, health and diet issues, finances, or life balance. Randy can help you. The World Ambassador for Family, Randy Rolfe has been helping families since 1985 to minimize the stress and heartache of modern living. To access some great and free downloadable tools, to get one of her internationally acclaimed books, or to have her inspire and excite your next event as your featured speaker, go to www.randyrolfe.com. That's RandyRolfe.com. Your family will thank you.
Hi, I'm Neil Haley, host of the Total Education Network. We're the only education talk show that airs shows 7 days a week on different stations. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org to learn about the exciting shows coming to the network. The show brings the total education experience. We interview interesting guests, have lively debates, and provide news and provide tips for parents. Please go to my website at TotalTutor.org for more information. Remember, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators, TotalTutor.org.
Opinions, options, answers. You're listening to Voice America Health and Wellness.
You're tuned in to Family First with your host, Randy Rolfe. To speak to Randy or her guests, please call 1-866-472-5792. That's 1-866-472-5792. You may also send an email to randyrolfe@randyrolfe.com. Now, back to Family First.
Welcome back to Family First. I'm Randy Rolfe, and we're talking with Cindy Dale about how to create togetherness. And I just want to say I want to thank my listeners for being here and sharing with me these wonderful people that we have as guests. We have over 40,000 listeners each month and growing. And so tell your friends, because we have wonderful, insightful people like Cindy Dale every week. Cindy Dale is author of The Subtle Body, which is very famous. Also the complete book of chakra healing, which is the place to go to understand chakra healing. It's in its 14th printing. And her newest book is Togetherness, Creating and Deepening Sustainable Love, which she co-authored with Andrew Wald, a psychotherapist. And her background is principally intuitive and spiritual counseling, and we've had wonderful insights already about how to break out of a stuck place around assumptions, which you may have picked up at 3 years old, about love and whether you're lovable. So, Cindy, I wanted to talk some more about how do people, as a practical matter, bring this kind of insight into their lives when, as you know, today people are feeling an awful lot of stress and they have multiple sandwich generation issues with children and grandchildren and parents, and also long work hours. They might be afraid to lose their job. And many people, you know, bring all those stresses home. What are some strategies to keep all those bundles of feelings from poisoning your relationships?
Oh, that's a great question. And we really don't have any margin left anymore. We're all like kind of falling off the edges, I think. And, you know, one of the ways that I know my co-author Andy would really be underscoring right now, if you're in a relationship, a romantic relationship, would be that every day, ask yourself the question, how can I show this person I love them? Not, you know, kind of what would I feel comfortable sharing doing for them, but what do they need? Andy, for instance, who's been happily married for 35 years, makes coffee for his wife every morning. He doesn't drink coffee, but she likes coffee. And his wife, Tess, does something special for him, equally importantly, absolutely every day. So I think we can always ask that question, you know, how can I show love? How can I give a demonstration that's going to mean something to the other person? And I think secondarily, it's been said before, and I'm going to say it again, we need to carve out time. There there is time, maybe not every day, but there is a way to make time, not just for ourselves, but for those important others. I, for instance, as a single person who's dating, call the same girlfriend absolutely every morning at the same time. And I change my work schedule every summer so that my 13-year-old can have me as a mom home most of the time, which means that I also inherit like five other 13-year-old boys since I'm the one home through most of the summer and the big food bills. But, you know, I really wouldn't have it any other way. So I think we need to globally get out the calendar and look at what we can do to arrange space and time and moments for connection and big chunks of time for connection, but also every day ask ourselves how we're going to do that. Because we've got to take the responsibility, I think, on ourselves. A lot of us get into the place of going, well, I want them to do it first. Well, that's the long, slow boat to China, and you're probably going to end up in Japan. You know, just start it with yourself and go with it. I've really raised my sons to think that way, too. And I have to say, I'm really proud as a parent that my 24-year-old will text me or call me, you know, every few days and go, how are you, Mom? Or when my 13-year-old, you know, kind of after baseball or football or hockey or blah, 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 you kind of get what my life is really all about. He looks at me in the eyes and he goes, well, how was your day, Mom? So if we're not trained to be that way, we can teach ourselves to be that way. And when we are that way, you know what? Other people kind of catch on, too.
Yes, it can be contagious. Just asking these simple questions, and it doesn't take very much time when you see the person to get real with them. You know, how's your day been like? And that was the first thing you said to me. You know, how's your day been like? And it just opens up a reality between you, so that there can be an energy flow. That makes so much sense. So you talk in your book about the power of choice, that people need to recognize that they always have that the power to do something nice, even if the other person's being a real pain in the neck. So can you tell us more about what you mean by the power of choice, how people can act on their feelings or not act on their feelings? And you use the term soothe themselves. Can you talk some about that power of choice?
Absolutely. Well, and Andy really likes to use the phrase, let's make deliberate acts of kindness, not random acts of kindness. And isn't that wonderful to really very consciously and conscientiously decide to be kind? And, you know, I'm by nature kind of a nice person, but not totally. You know, I can have this way of wanting to just share truth that really can cut. It's not a good way to be. And so I work on that within myself. So, you know, if my mom is saying something that I'd prefer not to hear, you know, I just kind of take a deep breath and I say, Cindy, what can you deliberately say here that's going to be kind, that's not wimpy, that may not be going along with a story that's not true, but doesn't need to be unkind either? And in order for me to consistently work on that, Randy, I have to soothe myself. I have to be the kind of person to say, if my feelings are hurt, that's kind of mine to work on first before I go to somebody and try to clear it up, even if I maybe don't end up going there. And, you know, I can't just kind of blame everybody else that they did something and I'm having a reaction to it before I, you know, lean back into myself and say, now, Cindy, maybe that wasn't personal. So what's going on with you? What's happening? What can I responsibly do to take care of myself, to see this a different way? And then if I need something for that other person or from them, you know, then I can more calmly negotiate. I can calmly decide how I'm going to interface with them. I developed a technique a long time ago that is part of why I have a brilliant relationship with my ex-husband, and it's called erasing emails. So, you know, some of the emails I get from my family members, for instance, my mom was real sick and is right now, but a few years ago, I got the strangest emails, like that were just people just sounding off, sisters sounding off because they were in stress and they weren't part of the decisions because they didn't live here and they couldn't be. And so, you know, unless the emails were kind, I would just kind of erase them. And then I would write one that had nothing to do with what they said, that was a kind email going back. So we have choices about how we're going to be without compromising our situation, our position, without being unethical. Because as we all know, sometimes we do have to say no, or we have to say, I won't do that, or that's not something in my value system. But in order to say that, we have to really be clear about what our value system is. So we really do always have choices. I tell myself with anything that if I only feel like I have one choice, I better wait until I see two choices. And even better, I need to wait till there's three choices so that I don't just have a knee-jerk reaction to what's going on. And my favorite phrase is, I'll get back to you. So, you know, we can take our time. We don't need to be rushed. And with some of these situations, rather than hurt ourselves or other people, we need to wait till we really see our choices. And our world is kind of more of a McDonald's world. It's instant mashed potatoes. It accelerates us rather than allows us to get easy. I had a mentor years ago, a lovely older gentleman in the healing field. And when I would tell him things that were happening with me, he never said anything. He may not even have replied about that particular thing I would bring up for a week or two till the next time I talked with him or met with him. And then he'd just kind of get around to it because that was really what he was doing, creating round to it, you know, just these little devices that said pause, just pause. And in our book, Togetherness, we encourage people to take that time and learn to pause so we don't take things personally, but we react in a way that ascribes to who we really are, kind of not what we've been trained to be.
That makes so much sense. It brings to mind a story I heard once about Gandhi, that a man came to him and said, My willpower has failed. I want to stop eating sugar, and I just can't. And I know I'm addicted to it. It's a terrible thing, and it's ruining my health. And Gandhi said, I'll get back to you. And the man came back a week later, and he said, why did you have to think about it? And Gandhi said, well, I had to stop eating sugar first. So, you know, he had to take care of his own stuff before he could respond intelligently to the gentleman. And that's so true. And I've heard from my son, who's 34, that and my daughter, 32, that there's great pressure to act immediately on your feelings, and people are texting back and forth wildly, saying who said what, and they shouldn't have said that, and you're supposed to get offended at anything that you can misinterpret. It really is about just stepping back and realizing that if there's only one choice, then it's not the right one. At least you're going to react from a place of fear rather than a place of personal power.
Exactly. My oldest son years ago was invited to my sister's wedding. I'm in Minneapolis and she's in California, and he was 16, 17, old enough to decide if he wanted to go or not, and he didn't want to go. Said, I don't want to go. It's not my thing. And she pestered him. My mother pestered him. He got phone call after phone call. I mean, the poor kid was really kind of, you know, hit on for, you've got to do this. And he liked my sister. He just didn't want to go. And finally, his dad and I looked at each other and said, because we'd been supporting him in his stand, are we parenting okay? So we went into my son's therapist, who was just this delightful, wise man. And he listened to Michael, and he looked at us, and he said, so you've taught your son he's not supposed to respond to shame. He said, good, you've done a good job. Why would you try to make him go now?
That's great.
So, yeah, you know, we need to respect ourselves, and we need to respect our boundaries and those people who themselves make choices that, like, from my sister's point of view, that she may not have been pleased with, but was a really solid choice on the part of my son. And so there's this constant need to kind of fall into and come from respect for ourselves and for other people as well in relationship.
Oh, that makes so much sense. We could talk all day, but we're coming up. I just have a couple minutes left. So I want people to be sure and know how to get your book and how they can connect with you. You have a wonderful website. So can you give us that information, Cindy?
I would love to. You can get the book Togetherness on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. Sometimes it's in some of the Barnes & Noble stores, or you can go online. And my website, I spell my name kind of funny, is cindydale.com, and it's CYNDIDALE.com. And you can learn more about Andy. I think he's got a website now, but I'm not sure. So just punch in Andrew Wald, and you'll see if his website's up or not. It was going up last I talked to him.
Great. And do get her book, Togetherness, Creating and Deepening Sustainable Love, by Cindy Dale and Andrew Wald. And I really appreciate all your insights. What would be one last thought that you'd like to leave listeners with, Cindy, today?
How about laughter?
You know,
I think nothing cures a tough moment in a relationship as much as laughter. Now, of course, we don't want to laugh at somebody, but if we can laugh at ourselves a little bit, or laugh with them, or lighten the load, you know, depression is very contagious, but so is joy. So I throw laughter in as my top vote.
Oh, that's fabulous. Thank you so much, Cindy Dale. And her book is Togetherness, Creating and Deepening Sustainable Love. And she's been sharing with us how to create togetherness in all your relationships with yourself, with your community, with your romantic partners, and with the divine. So thank you for being our guest, Cindy Dale.
We hope you've enjoyed Family First. Please tune in to our program every Friday at 4 p.m. Eastern Time, 1 p.m. Pacific Time, to join your host, Randy Rolfe, on the Voice America Health and Wellness Channel. The weekend is here. Enjoy it with your family. We'll see you next week.